Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's going pretty good. Been a little busy. I haven't been able to game too much, but I have been checking out quite a bit of movies. I saw The Naked Gun, the new one. Really liked it. I thought it was great. It was really fun. It was funny because it was just Alyssa and I, and then like one other like group of people, and it was like it looked like grandparents and like their grandson, and we were laughing like the entire movie, and they didn't laugh like once. So I was like, I don't know what's going on with them. They just like don't like it. So, like, I was like, why are you guys here? But I thought it was really fun. You know, it was like, I think it's not even 90 minutes, maybe like 80 something. It was just nice, short, sweet. I thought Liam Neeson was great. Pamela Anderson looked like she was having a lot of fun. I kind of wish we had a little more of her character. But just really fun. I still need to watch the originals, but it definitely makes me want to watch it. And I saw Shin Godzilla in the theater, which was awesome to experience. I can't believe Muscatine got it. And it was just Alyssa and I and one other random dude. And he left like 30 minutes in the movie. Like he like left for a little bit, like 20 minutes in. Maybe he just went to the bathroom, or maybe he was like, I don't know about this. And then he came back, and then yeah, like 35 minutes, something like that. He was like, he just left, and I was like,
noob.
I get it, dude, but you're fucking missing the best part. You know, kind of it's coming up. So,
Okay.
And then, yeah, I watched The Cure, so that's about all I've done lately.
And how was the Atomic Breath and Shin Godzilla in the theater?
Oh, my God, dude. It is glorious. It was so fucking awesome to see that. And it's just, it's so sick. Like, I do like that movie, but I feel like if you go in blind, I could understand why he was, like, clearly bored and left. I feel like you need some of the context of, like, what the movie is referencing and about with that 2011 nuclear disaster of I think Fukushima.
Well, you need to understand that it's like the Shin Godzilla is funny because it's a parody of Japanese like politeness and hierarchy and things like that. And if you I think if you don't go into it with that mindset, like I could see I really try not to use this term, but I could see somebody with like a very normie Godzilla mindset like being turned off by it.
Well, and like that dude probably saw the poster, which has Shin Godzilla being badass shooting lasers out of his back and stuff, and then most like it's like 80% people talking in rooms, 20% cool Godzilla shit. So I get it.
So I'll come back to you with this question. I want to get to Neil first. Neil, tell me what how you've been, and then I've got a follow up question on what Gideon said.
Well, had a kind of weird week. My dad had a sort of health emergency, so I had to go and support him on that, which was stressful. On top of figuring out what I'm going to do with my life, so. Been a little weird on the personal side of things. On the other hand, the Warhammer 40K Dawn of War remaster is sick.
Nice.
So, you know, can't complain about that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, life in shambles, but at least Warhammer stands.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's all we can hope for. I remember when I was at a job that was making me really, really miserable, it was like 2 or 3 months before Death Stranding came out, and I was like, I just have to make it to Death Stranding. And then like if something bad happens to me, that's fine. But I have to just make it to Death Stranding. That like kept me going. Which is sad in retrospect, but oh well. No, you do what you can.
You need something to look forward to, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's the little things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. God, I haven't really been up to that much. Xander and I finished our most recent Pookie Bear Couples Night game in Split Fiction. We finished that up last night after like a giant 4-hour session where we basically did the last half of the game. And yeah, it was really, really good. I liked it probably like right around the same level as I liked It Takes Two. I think it's like worse in some ways, but better in some other ways. But overall, really liked it. I think Xander liked it. Other than that, in terms of games, been playing, played a lot of Luminous in the bus today. My bus got like stuck and it took me like 20 extra minutes to get home because somebody like handicap was trying to get off the bus, and like the thing that was like lowering or raising the wheelchair wasn't working very well. So played a lot of Luminous today. Other than that, been kind of plugging away at Claire Expedition 33, but I'm probably like 30 to 40% through it, and it's like it continues to be fine. You know, I'm still not like super sold on like Game of the Year material, but you know, I'm open to things changing. It definitely keeps getting better. So other than that, prepping some wedding stuff and watering my boss's plants, and so yeah, I have just a super exciting life.
Nice. Very cool.
The follow-up question I was going to ask you guys, speaking of Gideon's experience at Shin Godzilla, have you guys ever walked out of a movie?
Yes, sort of. I walked out of my second viewing of Long Legs, but I walked out at like the last 15 minutes because I was so annoyed with the audience being so shitty. Like, people were on their phone on the left of me, and the people on the right literally talked the whole movie even after I like asked them to be quiet. And it's like there wasn't even that many people in the theater. It was like less than 10 people counting everybody. And I was like, why? It's like, why did you motherfuckers need to sit in my row? And it's like, if you don't want to watch the fucking movie and you want to be on your phone, why the fuck are you here? And why'd you pay to be here? It's like, that's the only one I can really think of off the top of my head right now.
I didn't choose to walk out of this one personally. So I have like no connection to the Avatar: The Last Airbender franchise. It's nothing against it. I've just like never watched it because it was like a channel that we didn't get in my household. So I don't have that connection to it or whatever. But when the M. Night Shyamalan live action movie came out, I went with some friends who loved the cartoon. And I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. One of the friends I was with is hearing impaired. so he talks at a louder range than.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Like what would probably be considered polite or normal or whatever. But there's a scene maybe a third of the way into the movie. They're liberating like the rock, the Earthcasters, I think, who are in like a concentration camp or something. And these like six dudes like form like a pyramid formation and they do a choreographed thing. I'm like, oh shit, they're going to like fucking move a mountain or something. It's going to be awesome. And then this like boulder floats across the screen. It's like, I could physically pick up this rock and throw it further and faster than these six guys are doing with their magic shit. And I guess my buddy had functioned the same reaction because he just stood up and screamed, "What?" And just stormed out of the theater. And I followed after.
That's awesome.
And was your friend Lil Jon?
He's a big guy. I was thinking of Lil Jon the Bear from your favorite furry movie.
No. I mean, Lil Jon is in. Yeah.
Shots.
Okay. I don't think I have ever walked. Okay, so I have never walked out of a movie, in the like capital W sense, where I was like, "This sucks, I'm leaving." Because my whole thing is like, listen, I'm already here. I've already spent that. I drove across town. I plopped down the money. I'm seeing this shit through. Like, I'm, you know, no matter how big of a piece of shit something is, I'm watching it till the end. But I did have an instance where I had to leave. So, this was when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was coming out. I was like really psyched to go see the new Tarantino movie. I had tickets. It was like right after the workday. And I was like ready to go. I was going alone. I was like ready to see this movie. And it was like opening week. So you got like a bunch of like special shit for like come in, and it was awesome. So like, you guys know to some degree, but I have had horrible, horrible stomach problems in the past where like it just hits me. And then like, I'm out of commission for 2 hours basically. And thankfully that part of my life is pretty much over, but it decided to rear its ugly head at the very beginning of me sitting down to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So like, I sat down, got in my chair, my stomach starts rumbling, I'm like, that's not good, whatever. So I go to the bathroom, run back. I've missed like the first 2 minutes of the movie. I'm like, oh thank god, okay, I can probably piece this all together and just take it from here. Also, I'm like in the middle of the row, so I'm like, I have to walk in front of a bunch of people.
Damn.
To like get to my seat. And then it hits me again, and I'm like, I can't do this to Tarantino. So like, I just like went to the bathroom, drove home, like punching the steering wheel the whole time, like trying not to ruin my pants. I'm like driving home, and I'm like so furious that I couldn't like sit there and see this freaking movie that I had like looked forward to. And then like, we ended up going like 2 weeks later, and I saw it with Grace, and it was great. But that's the only time I've like had to leave a movie. So that was a big bummer.
Yeah, that would be really disappointing, especially for a Tarantino movie, because you don't get those that often.
Yeah, especially like, son of a bitch right now.
Right.
Okay, so similar question. I was having this conversation with Laura and Paul last night. What was the first movie that you watched where you were like you made the transition from childhood to, oh, not all movies are good.
Yeah.
For me, it was Master of Disguise, the
yeah,
Dana Carvey movie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I remember like, you know, laughing or, you know, thinking like, oh, the trailer looks so funny, I'm sure it'll be good. And then like, you know, as a going to it with some friends, you know, in like second grade or something, and just being like, I'm not laughing. I know I'm supposed to be, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of coming to this, oh, some movies aren't actually good. Because like, up to that point, I think like I'd been able to justify to myself, like, going through like the family VHS collection. Oh, I didn't laugh at this movie because it's a grown-up movie.
Right.
Like I'm too young for this. And this one was like, no, this is like a dumb kids comedy, but I'm not laughing. So it's not good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I know what mine is, but I'm looking up to make sure I have the right name of it.
You don't want to slander some other movie?
No, it's not that. It's very specific.
I'm trying to even think, like, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Okay, so I think I found what it is. So it's the first Antonio Banderas Zorro movie. I just remember renting it from Blockbuster. Oh, you know, it's kind of a fun adventure movie. Let's get the whole family involved. And I distinctly remember like having more fun fiddling with the like the footstool release on the couch than like I was distracted by playing with the couch more than I was interested in watching this shitty movie. And that's like when it clicked for me. I was like, oh, this movie sucks. And I remember doing the exact same thing with the James Bond movie that has Halle Berry in it. Like my parents rented it, we were all watching it, and then at some point I just lost interest and left the room. I was like, fuck this, I'm not doing this anymore. So those are the only two that really stand out to me as being like, we watched them on, we had like a rear projection TV and we watched it in the basement, and you know, mom made popcorn or whatever, and we all sat down to watch the movie, and it just, you know, wasn't all that. Mm. How about you, good?
I'm really struggling to think of what it could even be. And somebody asked me earlier too, like if I remembered the first movie I saw in theaters, and I like couldn't remember that either. But
I can tell you what mine is. It was Oliver and Company.
Oliver and Company. Okay.
The Disney movie with Billy Joel as the dog.
Oh, okay. yeah, I don't know, dude. I honestly, I don't know, because I feel like I didn't really watch too many or like a diverse amount of movies when I was like younger, because I still remember like you showing me Pulp Fiction, and that like fucking blew my head open and as to like what movies could even be. But I feel like growing up, I mostly just kind of watched whatever, like just a lot of like, you know, original trilogy, Star Wars and things like that. But I'm drawing a blank. If I think of it, I'll let you guys know, but I don't really know.
All right, guys. Well, then, are you ready to hop into this week's special feature?
Yeah,
or,
sure.
Or what would they call it? Feature presentation? What do they say on the Disney DVD? The guy's like, and now...
Feature presentation.
Yeah. Our feature presentation.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
That's burned into my... That guy's voice, dude. It's like iconic.
Oh, dude, yeah. I want to wake up to that when I die. I want to hear that, you know?
And now, our future...
It's a montage of my life.
Oh, dude. They're going to be, like, going over my... I'm going to be going over my sins with St. Peter at the Pearly Gates, and he's going to flash forward every time I busted a Shrek hentai, and he's going to be like, dude.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't let you.
Sam, are you sure that you shouldn't be the one that's at... Grace's Shrek party.
So yeah, St. Peter's just gonna turn to me and be like, dude, really? yeah. Okay, now I can't find this goddamn movies Wikipedia page. I'm trying to get back to where I got it. Okay, yeah, I know you got it. Okay, here I am. Okay, so we're talking about the movie Cure, not The Cure, but the movie Cure. It's a 1997 movie by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, not related, of course, to Akira Kurosawa, as we established last week. Mm-hmm. A brief overview of this movie would just be to say that there are a string of murders happening where the murderer does not have any, like, they can recollect doing the murder, but they don't understand, like, that they had any motive, and they fully admit to doing it, and there's a bunch of, like, 5, 6, 7 different murders that all pop up with this same story, and it's about the detective who's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. They're all the bodies are showing up with this weird X pattern where they're cut basically like from the lower part of their or from like the, like kind of like from their ear, like the base of the ear, down to like into the shoulder, right? And they're basically cut like an X like that. So okay, yeah, pretty consistent pattern, and the detective has to figure out what's going on. So, Gideon, you brought this movie. What was your history with it, and why did you want to bring it?
So I'd never seen this movie before, but I'd seen the trailer. I thought it looked pretty interesting, and I'd heard pretty good just like talking or talks about this movie and kind of praise for what it kind of did for maybe like psychological horror type of things. And so it just seemed like a cool like detective movie. It seemed kind of influential. And so I kind of watched a couple different like Criterion movie trailers just to try and see one I might want to bring to the podcast that maybe we hadn't seen, like all of us. So I was like, yeah, let's jump in. We're almost to spooky season, not quite there yet. So I thought this was kind of like a nice preemptive one for that. So yeah, that's why I figured I'd bring it.
So Neil, why don't you tell me what you knew about this movie going into it, or if you'd ever heard of it before?
So I knew so little about this movie that I watched the trailer for one other movie called The Cure, and about 20 minutes of a second movie called The Cure. Before I was like, these aren't what Gideon would make me watch. And went back into our chat and was like, oh.
That's why I like put in the picture so you guys have the visual, the reference.
It gets hard with Japanese movies sometimes, and there's only so many titles, you know.
So here's the thing. Sam, you had posted in the chat something about like if this movie was set in Texas, they'd have like put him in the chair or something about, or it, specifically, they'd put this kid in the chair. And I think like in retrospect, you mean the antagonist of the movie, the sort of mastermind behind it all, not to give too much of it away right away. But one of the movies called The Cure is specifically about two boys sort of Huckleberry Finning it down the Mississippi River to Louisiana because they've heard a doctor there has a cure for AIDS, and one of them got AIDS from a dirty needle. And I was like, is this what Sam was talking about?
It are you talking about the 1995 The Cure, the family
Probably, yeah.
drama? Okay.
It
Yeah.
must be.
And so that was the one that I watched the trailer for.
That's so
And
funny.
then there's another one that I think it's like a British drama. It's set in America, but it has a bunch of British actors in it, where like a company is covering up that they've found a cure for cancer because they want to keep getting pharmaceutical sales for chemotherapy. And I watched about 20 minutes of that, and like th this isn't good or bad enough for Gid to force me to watch.
That's
So
awesome.
shout
Think
out
the
to
last
you
time
for
that
watching at
happened
least
was
20 minutes.
Alex Prinsen with House, right? That's the
Yeah.
last time somebody like accidentally watched the wrong. So something with Japanese horror movies with one word titles, like oddly consistent. Okay, safe to say then you'd never heard of this and you had no history with it.
Yep, just totally blind on my part.
I was completely the same way. I had actually watched a Criterion closet of the primary actor in this movie at a previous point, and he recommended this movie, even though he's in it, which I thought was like kind of funny.
That's pretty base.
He was like, "I am in this movie. It is a masterpiece."
That's
Like, I was like, "Damn!"
awesome. Oh,
Directed
and
by Hideo Kojima.
dude, isn't one of the characters I think is in Shin Go Godzilla too, one of the actors. I think one of them plays a prime minister.
I would not be surprised. I think this movie made a big star out of the lead guy.
And he's in Perfect Days, which is
Oh, he's
another.
in 13 Assassins.
Yep.
Okay.
Which Sam hasn't watched yet.
Not that I really need to defend myself on that, but what happened there was that it was like playing Saturday morning, and I was at a gig Friday night until like 1:30 in the morning.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to that. So, yeah. Anyway, I had not heard of this film at all, or at least I had not consciously like remembered hearing about this.
Did you guys watch the trailer for it before watching the movie?
No, I
try not to watch trailers because like so often they give way too much away these days.
Okay. I was just
wondering. Yeah, like my problem with like watching a trailer for something like this is that I always like in the trailer you'll see somebody in a costume, and then for the first like 3/4 of the movie you haven't seen them in that costume yet, and you're like, well, I know they're not going to die because I've got to see them in that costume that they wore in the trailer, and that hasn't shown up yet, obviously, so they're not going to be dead, right? Or unless they're going to like extraordinary lengths to fool me, but I don't think most filmmakers are going to like do that. But yeah, I went in totally blind. So where do we want to start with this? Let's just start with high level thoughts. I'll go because I'm already talking. I thought this movie was really, really good, although slightly lessened its impact because we'd already watched Memories of Murder. And I know Memories of Murder came out after this, but I think Memories of Murder is very, very, very similar. And like, I had never seen a movie like that before. And so if I had like never seen Memories of Murder, I would have thought like this was like outstanding and like extremely original. And of course in 1997, it would have been extremely original because, you know, obviously Memories of Murder didn't exist yet. So I think it's awesome. I think it's really good. I don't want to say it demands a reviewing, but I'm almost like tempted to rewatch and like watch for other clues and like things happening in the background and things that I didn't notice before. It's the kind of horror movie that stays with you and keeps you thinking and kind of like has this pervasive creepiness to it. It isn't as visceral as Audition. God, I mean, I would say this out of the three, out of like House, Audition, and this, I would say this is maybe my favorite of the three.
Okay.
Overall.
Wow.
And I know that's like, that seems like incredibly high praise because like we're thinking of Neil giving both of those movies like his top pick of the year, the previous 2 years. I was a little softer on those movies than Neil was, but I still really liked both of them. But I would say like this is, I think, pretty easily my favorite of the three. Well, I don't know. Audition's pretty good, but depending on the day, it could flip either way. So, yeah, really, really enjoyed it. At first, I will say, I was like incredibly bored by this movie for like the first half hour or something, and the antagonist was pissing me the hell off. It was so frustrating
to watch
him just answer questions with other questions and not know what was going on and to just like repeat himself constantly. I wanted to smack the shit out of this guy, but you know, obviously that's on purpose. So I'll shut up and Neil, how about you tell me kind of where you are from a high level perspective and then we'll go back to Gid.
Yeah. So even before I found out that, I'm probably getting his name wrong here, but Bong Joon-ho, the director of Memories of Murder, lists as like one of his favorites of all time. I was like, man, this movie should be called Memories of Murder. very interesting. I agree. I think I need to rewatch it to see like now that I sort of know the twist, you know. You know, how much of it is like sort of apparent to you going in.
What do you just out of for context? What do you consider the twist?
I mean, so it's almost like a, in some ways, it's almost like a zombie movie or a vampire movie, where like people are infected, become murderers.
Right.
and I guess to give the twist away or the plot away, the main antagonist, Miyama, is able to like hypnotically induce the compulsion to murder in people. In some sort of like subtle way, like he doesn't have to like have them sit down and, you know, wave a coin on a string in front of them. Like he's got his own method that's more subtle and flexible. And at the same time, he's also pretending to be a amnesiac where he doesn't remember anything about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Is he pretending?
I think he's pretending.
I think that's his, like, yeah, he's like his guise or whatever. He's trying to act like he doesn't know anything. Yeah.
At the very end, he, you know, goes back to that sort of barn shaped building and he addresses our main detective like they've known each other for a while.
Right. Man, that barn was fucking creepy. I don't really know how to qualify that or to quantify that, but man, when that thing was just on screen, it just had this horribly haunted presence. You know what I mean?
I just want to mention, I think that's my favorite shot of the film, when you see him standing outside the barn about to go in. Oh my god, love that.
So who is the, there's like a cardboard cutout or a picture of a woman in the barn that you keep thinking is like real the whole movie, and then they like, he gets up to it and he reveals that it's just like a, you know, it's just a picture or whatever. Who is that? Is that not the woman in the
No, I think that's the guy that is hypnotizing the woman in that videotape.
So Baccarat or whatever his name is, the guy that's like the OG,
right? Hypnotist or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I could be wrong, but I think that's who it is.
So I think we cut Neil off in the middle of his.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I think that was my major thought, was again just like, you know, it's an infection movie on some level, like like obviously it's, the parallel isn't totally perfect to compare it to a zombie movie or a vampire movie, but I think there's something there, particularly with the ending.
Oh yeah.
Did you feel haunted after watching this movie, Neil?
Like I said, I think it definitely needs a review.
Okay, because I felt like the infection was creeping out of the screen, and like now Mesmer knows that I've watched this movie, right? Like I feel like something bad is going to happen because like I know I'm in the club. So Gideon, how about we get your 10,000 foot thoughts?
Yeah. So. It was interesting. I do feel like the trailer made it seem a little more exciting than it ended up being, but I am really glad I watched it. A couple other movies I wanted to mention that obviously are totally inspired by this. I'd like for us to get to at some point, but like The Ring is so totally inspired by this.
Yeah, I was gonna say like that's another like non-traditional infection movie.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think. I'll come back. I know there was a couple other, but obviously, like you mentioned, Memories of Murder. Just even like the color grade, and it's drab and bleak.
Yeah.
And gray.
Yeah.
I love how it's like almost this depressed detective mood film in that way, where he's just like, he's dealing with like trouble with his wife having these like mental health issues, or maybe she's like schizophrenic or something, and that's like really stressing him out, and all these like unsolved murders that like aren't making any sense, and even like how it's happening with this no motive. I think it's beautifully shot a lot of the time. I really like the kind of ambience and soundscape of it. I really appreciate that. One thing that I did think was a little weird Early in the movie, I think when the title shows up and he's like driving his car, they're playing like kind of funky, like jazz, like upbeat music. But that was, I was like, what the fuck is like, what? I was like, why is this not like some brooding, menacing sounding music right now? So I thought that was a little strange, but maybe there's more to that that I don't understand.
You're saying there's a scene with a Japanese guy driving in a car to funky music, and you didn't give this movie a 5 out of 5 immediately?
Yeah, somehow. Yeah. So yeah, I really appreciate it, but I agree with like what Neil said, where I think I need to rewatch to kind of better understand and better appreciate it. And I feel like this movie for me is kind of like with Shin Godzilla, where like I like it less than I thought I would initially, but I think my appreciation for the film and how much I like it will grow over time with revisits. And yeah, one thing Neil mentioned too about the infection, almost like Inception or something, like giving them the idea to murder people. But it's like, it's ironic it's called Cure because there's no fucking cure for this thing, right? And I'm sure
So,
that's probably part of it. Go ahead.
they had to change the name during production, apparently, because there
Oh.
was some like religiously themed like subway murders.
Oh.
But it was originally called Evangelist. And then they wanted to like
Oh.
distance themselves from like the recent murders, so they changed the name late in production.
That's interesting.
I
I didn't
think
know
both are fitting somehow to me.
that.
Cure works really well, but Evangelist also works.
I like Cure way better for the name personally,
Yeah.
but
Evangelist just makes me think of Evangelion because I'm a weeb, apparently.
and I love how, yeah, bleak, ominous. It's like you're trapped in this depression fog. And even like, spoilers for the end, when he blasts the shit out of Mamiya or whatever his name is,
Like Ken
and he
Tapton.
keeps blasting him, and then it's like at the end you're like, fuck. It doesn't even matter because this shit's just gonna keep happening. 'Cause you see that waitress that's gonna like slice somebody up with a knife she pulls out. And it's just like, it's not like a downer and like I'm sad. It's just like, oh my God, like this shit is just like never ending. Like with a depression kind of episode or something like that. So yeah, it was just like really interesting. Yeah, I'm glad I watched it and I brought it. Yeah, I guess that's my high level thoughts for now.
Okay, so I think the thing I want to get to with this movie, one thing I want to mention is the pacing. Did anybody else feel like this movie was totally glacial for like the first half hour? I was like interested by the premise, but by the time that guy was like walking down the beach and then talking to his like first victim, like the first time we like really see it, I was like, oh my God, this is the slowest movie I've ever seen in my life, and this kid won't stop asking questions. I was like about ready to lose my mind. And then, like I have Zoomer brain rot, so normally if I like sit down to watch a 2 hour movie, I'll do like half one night and half like the second night. And by the hour mark, I was like, I need to see where this goes. But did anybody else feel that way at first, that it was like maybe a little slow, like definitely a slow burn movie, right?
It's slow burn, but I sort of have the opposite reaction where, so again, like comparing it to Memories of Murder, my first thought was when you see like the first murder, and they instantly have like they're just saying like this is the guy who did it. I was like, oh, this can be another like bad procedural where like the cops are more interested in getting the confession than they are with like actually getting the killer. And then that wasn't the case. It's like, oh no, they actually do know. And we're moving on to the next murder, and it's somebody else doing the same. I was kind of like, oh, this is totally different from what I was expecting. So
I think that's what's so refreshing about it.
yeah. So I wasn't as bothered by the pacing as as you probably were.
I feel like maybe a little bit in the beginning, but I was pretty curious about the whole premise and just with how much buzz. I think sometimes it can feel a bit slow. And one thing, you've mentioned how like the antagonist is just pissing you off. He was pissing me off, and obviously if they did this, we wouldn't have the movie, but like it's like, God damn it, police officers, fucking handcuff this bitch to a table. Like he
Yeah.
shouldn't have a fucking lighter. He shouldn't be able to walk around the room and be yapping all the time and doing all this other shit. It's like, oh my God, like smack him in the face, slam his head into the table, and handcuff him to it. It's like, come
Yeah,
on.
well,
But
I
yeah,
want
we
some
wouldn't
Maine
have
justice.
that.
I want some Louisiana justice. I want some like True Detective shit going on here,
Yeah.
you know, like
It
put
did make you wonder if
yeah.
like Korea has like a different, or not Korea, but like East Asia has like a different procedural system, because like again,
Well,
just
they don't
comparing it
memories of
to,
murder. They're beating the shit out of those guys all the time in that movie.
yeah, but more just like, I mean, you're not supposed to do that in America, but like typically like American suspects are handcuffed to the table, and like, again, like yeah, this guy's just like wandering around the room. They've got like they've got one of the murderers in the psych ward, and he's like able to run around and slam his head into the walls, and it's not a padded room. Like, guys, I think at this point you're allowed to restrain him physically.
That scene where the guy like ran into the wall and like the clearly like the police psychologist or like some psychologist they had brought in, whatever, to like evaluate him. I just want to be like, what are you doing here, dude? You're in so over your head with this. Like you're gonna like what it do, oh, are you gonna tell me about the day in college you learned about like mesmerism and treating the like fucking like crazy occult dudes? I don't know. That it just struck me like it filled me with this feeling of like hopelessness about the situation where I was like, what are any of these police going to do against a force of pure malevolent evil? And I think like that's ultimately the feeling that the movie most tries to invoke in you is this feeling of like helplessness and this feeling of this desperation, which I think it does exceptionally well, like from like getting what you were saying, the cinematography just conveys this cold, bleak, dark, like you will never win against this sort of evil.
It's like unknowable. It's like the mist in the fog. You can't grab it. You
Right.
can't
You
shoot it.
can't beat the shit out of it, right? Like even if you 10 tap this dude like they do, like that idea is still going to go through you into some waitress, and then she's gonna go, you know, stabby stabby on somebody. And I think that is, because this isn't a very like boo gotcha horror movie, you know, it's not a very jump scary kind of movie. But it is an insidious one that kind of creeps into your psyche and depresses you, and just it's a very effectively yucky movie.
The like with the depressing things we've been talking about and like that nebulous defeating feeling. One recurring shot I really love is when I don't know if it's always him and his wife on the bus, but you see it almost looks like they're fucking flying in the clouds and it's all behind them. And he's always talking about taking her on this trip, which I love their relationship and how he's just very sweet with her and worried about her and trying to like do right by her and stuff. It reminded me. I'll definitely bring this movie to the podcast sometime. Good Time with Robert Pattinson, the movie before Uncut Gems that the Safdie brothers did. The final song in that movie, I'm going to read this lyric from it, which is like what I'm talking about with Cure right now, where they say this: someday, I swear we're going to go to a place where we can do everything we want to, and we can pet the crocodiles. And it's like he keeps promising her, you can go, you pick where we go on this trip. You do, I'm gonna make it happen. Like this is the year, whatever. And it's like that shit's never gonna happen. You're never gonna be able to pet the crocodiles, like it's gonna chomp your arm off. This thing's gonna like kill you and your wife and ruin your life and everything. And it's even that haunting vision where he thinks his wife like hung herself, and like that was maybe one of the most powerful scenes in the whole movie. And yeah. I love the stark contrast that this movie has, where it's like, and then it shifts and it's really bright and she's like, oh, what's going on, you know? Or that police officer that murders his partner police officer in broad daylight.
Did either of you think it was going to go back to like Meiji era Japan? There's no way you would have thought that, but like when his partner, like the I don't want to call him a police psychologist, but his partner that like is telling him, oh, the hypnotist would be, it would be possible, but it would take forever to get somebody that hypnotized or whatever. He shows him the old tape, like the old black and white footage of like early 20th century Japan, and like the hypnotist is not on screen, but you can see him hypnotizing like the woman. She's not a geisha, but she's dressed in like that sort of clothing, and it's like a black and white tape from, you know, a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really awesome that they took it all the way back, and they're like, oh, this has been going, they established the idea that like this has been going on for like more than 100 years maybe, and this Mayama kid just like unearthed it and mm-hmm. like found this ancient evil and like stumbled upon it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was like a really effective part. Like when it started being more occult, I think is like when I started to get really interested. Like when they start finding the monkeys that are fucked up in the same way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of suggested that there's like, this has been going on for a long time, and there's like a lot of history to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder, I just wonder with the end too, like that waitress that pulls the knife, is that because of that primary antagonist, or is that like somebody else, or like maybe he's taught other people to hypnotize in this way, or like it's like bleeding out, like, you know, yeah, like infecting people, like Neil said.
I took it to be that it was the detective who
was, yeah, I did as well.
Oh, okay. Carrying the infection and had infected the waitress.
Did he do the X thing to her, or interesting.
I didn't remember specifically him doing the X, but Neil pays more closely attention to me, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, God. Well, I mean, what else to pull out with this?
Dude, got to talk about his baller ass jacket. I want to be a depressed detective, fucking walking around trying to solve it in that jacket.
The Blade Runner coat. Yeah.
I was like, everything would be a little bit okay if I had that jacket.
Yeah. No, it's not okay. That's why you're wearing the jackets.
The jacket protects me.
Yeah, dude. This, like, the long-ass, like, Deckard coat. So awesome. Oh. Like, I just want to, like, when we were in Japan, Grace always thinks this is, like, so funny. Like, I liked being there with Grace, and I liked being there with Paul and Dalton. But I remember, like, one morning we were in, like, Akihabara, and we had been out drinking the night before, and, you know, I feel like I've talked about this twice in one podcast now, but I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. So I like, I don't, there's obviously like no place to go in like super highly populated areas, like stores and things like that. You don't want to be like going and be like, hey, can I use the bathroom? But I haven't bought anything, especially when you know, speak Japanese, right? And you're clearly a dirty, stupid foreigner. So I walked like 10 minutes down the street to go find a immaculately clean, futuristic public bathroom. And I always tell Grace that my favorite 10 minutes of being in Japan was the walk to the public bathroom where I was just alone, like some random white guy walking in Japan. And I tell you that to tell you this, that I think that walk would have been even better if I had one of these jackets and like a cigarette. Like, someday I'll go back and just walk around at night and chain smoke and wear one of these jackets. It'll be awesome.
Will you have a copy of Cure on Blu-ray in your jacket pocket?
Oh yeah, I'll have some like scraggly looking wired headphones and be listening to like the Blade Runner soundtrack or something, you know.
And you could like open the Blu-ray case and you're like reading the booklet inside, like talking about the
Yeah.
movie.
Yeah, and I'm just everybody's just making they're all making fun of me and I can't understand them. They're like, look at this fucking asshole here.
Yeah, like, fuck off.
All right. What else do we want to pull out with this movie? I feel like it's so it's almost like a minimalist movie. You know, it's hard to pull out individual things. Did you guys notice that the I read something online about all the individual not the victims, but the victims of the hypnosis that then go on to murder, or one of the interpretations that of this movie is that like it is about all his people he hypnotizes are like too comfortable in their lives, and
Oh.
somebody said that this movie is about like what happens when people become too comfortable and they become bored.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm not sure I
Yeah, we
picked up
haven't
on
heard
that
from you enough.
specifically.
Oh, so like the one interpretation that I read was just that
No,
all the victims.
I heard
Oh,
you. I
you
just
heard me. Okay.
didn't make that connection personally. Not that
I
it's not
did not make
invalid.
that connection either personally.
Same.
Although all of them are like, well, I don't want to say they're all hung up in some way, right? Because like the woman, the psychology games that he's playing with the woman and being like, oh, they didn't think you were going to become a doctor. They said you were just a girl, blah, 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 blah. You know, obviously he's like playing the mind games with her, but he doesn't like, we don't really see him play the mind games with like, let's say the detective. Or the not sorry, not the primary detective, the police officer that ends up murdering the guy in broad daylight. I don't think there was like quite the same kind of like psychological thing going on there, but obviously he was doing a lot of like mental manipulation on the primary main character. That stuff is pretty dark. I don't know, you guys ready to wrap it up and give scores?
One thing I wanted to ask your guys' opinion on is, so I think like unfortunately, a certain amount of like the nuance and performance in this is lost in translation. Like, yeah, I'm just not getting like the full depth because I don't speak Japanese. But one thing that at least I feel is, I think there's a technical term for it in the movie business, but like it's not choreography per se, but it's like the way people move around screen. And I think that like East Asia has a very different like idea of what that's supposed to look like. Like where it almost feels goofy to me at times. Similarly, like the scene where the police officer kills the other police officer, or where our protagonist shoots the villain. Like it don't to me it almost had like comedic timing. It reminded me of Death of Stalin. Like with like the sort of almost casual like brutality of just executing somebody matter of factly. Like, yeah, of course I had to shoot them. I don't know. Like I just wonder if you guys have any similar feeling, or if I'm just like, you know, a sociopath.
Maybe not the like execution scene, but maybe some other parts. I'm trying to put my finger on which moments, but I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a certain amount of like really, really dark humor to this movie. I kind of feel what you're picking up on, but not specifically in like the execution scene. But there is like a sadistic black humor to the whole situation. Although I don't think that's like the prevailing, you know, motivating factor of the movie at all. But it seeps through sometimes a little bit. I don't necessarily see that in like all Japanese horror movies or like Eastern movies that we've watched, but I can see where you're coming from on that. What was the scene aside from the murders, the execution that you said? Do you notice that?
So like the police officer killing the other police officer, and then at the very end where like the villain's about to like start his monologue, and instead our protagonist just guns him down.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to your bullshit, man.
Surprise and humor often, you know, they're not identical, but they're definitely brothers, right? They're definitely siblings. So I think there's something maybe to that. Like we laugh at something because it's unexpected or because it's like obviously expected. So I think that's probably where that's coming from. Gideon, anything else you wanted to add before we start wrapping things up?
I don't think so. I appreciate, like, I really like the color grade of this movie and the bleakness and the depressive
vibe. Did you stream it?
So I wanted to mention, because you talked about, like, the iTunes streaming. I rented it through that, and I have heard that I think of all, like, the streaming platforms, I do think, like, iTunes or Apple streaming, whatever you want to call it, it does have like a higher bit rate, so I think generally it's like a better quality. But that's how I watched it through.
And it looks good.
Yeah, it looked excellent. I thought it looked really good.
That's always my takeaway too, is that it doesn't look as good as a DVD, but it looks better than like streaming it on Amazon, where I'm assuming they're cutting every possible corner they can in terms of bit rate. I think the iTunes basically feels like, well, you know, it's a stream, but you are paying for it, so we're gonna like give you the higher bit rate because you just spent, you know, $3 or whatever.
I always have issues when I'm trying to watch something on Hulu, and it's like, I swear to God, it drops to like 240p, and it's like it's so weird. But I feel like if I go into Disney Plus and then watch it that way, it like streams it better, and I don't have that dip in quality.
Weirder things have certainly happened.
I don't think I have too much else to say. One final thing. I love how early on you kind of get like, it's like, oh, this guy kind of knows what he's doing. When you see he discovers that man hiding in that like crawl space or whatever in the hallway. You know what I mean? Where it's like, damn, there's all these other people around him and nobody fucking notices, but he noticed.
Right. You get the feeling that he's competent, which makes it feel more hopeless when things start going negatively and he can't like really handle it. You're like, well, if this guy can't fucking handle it, then you know, what hope do the rest of us have? Neil, how about you? Anything else you want to touch on?
One other thought that I had that maybe you'll appreciate, Sam, is watching this with like all the hypnotic suggestion definitely reminded me of Metal Gear Solid and just hypnotizing himself to hypnotize other people's that I don't know like if Japan has like a quote unquote like deep relationship with hypnosis, but
I bet
Kojima is a fan of this movie.
Yes, I was just going to say, Kojima, there's no doubt that Hideo Kojima fucking loves this movie, and the hypnosis thing played into, like, what eventually, I think, like, a lot of the, oh, I hypnotized myself actually kind of came into play in Metal Gear Solid 4, but Metal Gear Solid 2 came out, like, not too long after this movie came out, like, within 4 years, so, yeah, definitely something to be said there. God, you know, we got to get you on the Metal Gear Solid train because we played the first one, but we haven't played two or three.
I got to get that collection. It's got to happen.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, guys, whose turn is it for next week?
I think it's me.
Okay. All right, Neil. Well, lay it on us, man.
So sort of fortuitously, this was on my list, and then YouTube algorithm autoplay brought up a clip of it. So I was like, okay, well, you know, let's run with that happenstance. Kind of a kids movie, Small Soldiers.
Dude,
this is such a Gideon movie.
Oh my god, you don't even know. That's funny.
That's awesome. Did we
do ratings? I don't think.
We did. Yeah, shit. Fuck. I'm gonna give it a 4.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. You know, for a movie with this slow pacing to keep me for the 2 hours watching it alone, like on a weeknight, I was thrilled.
Nice.
And I definitely like want to revisit it soon. You know, it's like one of the movies you want to tell people about. You want to be like, oh, you know, but like you can't just tell your coworkers go watch this movie where somebody gets their face ripped off. You know what I mean? Like, because they're gonna think you're a fucking weirdo. So, you know, it's like I want to tell people about it, but I can't, which is like why I like having this podcast, because right. You know, YouTube freaks will watch anything. So. I'm gonna say a 4. It's like one of those, it's hard to find a fault with, but you know, a 5's gotta be in my like pantheon of greats, and but I really enjoyed it, so definitely like one of my favorite movies this year for sure.
Very nice. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, I'm also gonna give it a provisional 4. Like I said, I think it needs a rewatch on my end. But you know, kind of the fact that like I haven't just like totally ruled it out of needing a rewatch at all, I think probably says something about it. So definitely enjoyable, definitely some interesting themes. And I'll be interested to see how I feel on a rewatch when I, you know, muster up the energy to do so.
Very nice. So for me, when I finished the movie, I was a little bit more down on it. I would give it like a strong 3, but even after just like thinking about it, and even similarly, like with Memories of Murder, I think I gave that a 3, but I feel like if I rewatched both of those, I would easily give them a 4. And maybe some of it's like, you know, I have to pay more attention to the dialogue because it's a foreign film and I need to know like what's going on in the plot. And then on the rewatch, obviously I kind of know better. And I didn't want to do what I did with Lawrence of Arabia, where I like watched a bunch of special features and things about it yet. Like now I probably will. So I will give a very, very strong 3, but I pretty much guarantee next time I watch it, it would be a 4. I think it's really good. It was a little slow. It wasn't totally what I was expecting, and it wasn't as exciting as I was expecting it to be, but I do think it is very good. I love the mood and atmosphere. I love the main character. And it totally, like you guys said, it gets under your skin, and it hasn't left my mind since I've watched it. So I'm just kind of going off of like right when I finish the movie, I give it a very strong 3.
All right. I could totally say it. I think it's very respectable.
I was very torn between a 3 and a 4. I basically give it a 3.5 on Letterboxd.
I just want to update you guys. Variety is reporting that Nick Cage is in talks to be the star of True Detective season 5.
Whoa.
And it will be set in New York City, which is the greatest fucking combination I've ever heard in my life. That's awesome.
I'm so excited.
All right, guys. Well, Small Soldiers next week.
Let's do it.
I'm playing a gig tomorrow night. Anybody doing anything fun this weekend?
No, I'm just chilling. Chilling. Might hang out with a friend. Other than that, big time chilling.
Yeah. And then next week, you got to get ready because the Gears of War is coming out, and you're going to have to.
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm ready.
I did. Yeah, you're going to have to send me through the gauntlet.
Dude, it's going to be awesome. I did. Did I tell you how I had to? The way that I was able to get it is like they sent me a message through Xbox Live, and I had to claim it that way. Isn't that weird? I couldn't just. It wasn't just like automatically unlocked because I own the 2015 version.
That is definitely. Weird. They're so much better at that than PlayStation is. So it's weird to me that like they had to do that for one kind of.
Because I was like trying to figure out how the fuck I get it, because they say you get it for free if you own the 2015 Ultimate Edition. And then I saw I had a message. I was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, oh, it's directly from Xbox. It's like, okay.
What the heck's this? No, nobody sends me messages.
Yeah, I had a weird thing happen like a year ago when they started doing PS1 classics on PS5. I was like, I wasn't subscribed to premium, but I was just buying them a la carte. So I bought Resident Evil Director's Cut a la carte, downloaded it, played it. And like a year later, I was subscribed to premium and I tried to download it again. And it wouldn't let me download it anymore because I had already, like, there was some weird bug where like I couldn't download it at all, even though I had bought it, because now I had like a premium account and it just like somebody didn't think that through. And I was just totally hosed on that. So. Like I said, Xbox is usually so much better on that sort of like the backwards compat and the entitlements and things like that. So it's surprising to me that they had to do it in such a way.
Yeah, what's that feature called? Like it's like smart
play. Smart delivery.
Yeah, smart delivery. Yeah, that thing. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, good shit. Well, boys, I'm off. I'm going to, it's only 9 o'clock. Maybe I was craving a little. Maybe I'll go put some knack before bed. So
nice
knack too.
Do you remember in the Siri house where I was like playing knack all the time?
Yeah, because you're a sociopath.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'll see you guys next week for Small Soldiers.
Later, boys.
Peace out.
Take care.